SIU President Randy Dunn is joining us this morning.
I create this mood when I come around anymore. I don't know what it is. The rain starts to fall.
You know what it is, Randy? I got to tell you, I'm a little self-conscious, to be honest with you. And since we're talking about that subject, you know, I've kind of evoked your name on more than one occasion recently with people that I've been speaking
yes.
with. It's been the governor. It's been the comptroller. I'm a radio show host. And
everybody loves
more,
SIU.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I feel that I have an opportunity sometimes to advocate for Southern Illinois as a whole and draw attention to our issues when I have statewide figures here.
Indeed.
And unfortunately, I've not heard anything that showed me any level of promise. You?
No, not yet, no.
What's your countdown now for cuts? $31
million. Yeah, you know, the SIU Carbondale campus has actually done $20 million plus since this whole mess started, going on, you know, 22, 23 months now. So for those who would say, well, SIU needs to tighten its belt, or, you know, they need to take some reductions like everybody else during these times, the campus has done that. And they've done it in a big way. But when you go for this long and you're a state university and you do not have the state with a budget to provide a level of support that's even close to what we had been budgeting up through the last couple of years, you can't keep operations going the way they are. So we've basically, you know, spent the reserves that are available to the Carbondale campus. They've done these $20+ million in cuts. So now to keep us sustainable moving forward, we're looking at about another $30 million to be able to keep the doors open.
30.8.
Yeah, something in that range. I mean, it's, you know, we set a $30 million target in addition to the $21 million. So
okay.
It's going to be in the ballpark,
gotcha.
Right? Total $50 million when it's all said and done. And we have to do that to ensure that we have the ability to keep operating, to keep providing programs for students, doing, you know, minimally what we do to serve this region. Because with the uncertainty, the lack of predictability, that's the only way we know that we can make a path forward and not be, you know, in a worry about whether or not we're going to exist for the future. Now, it's weird to think about it, but, you know, over the last 22 months or so, I said we've done about $21 million in cuts across the campus already. And it's weird to talk about a figure like $21 million and say this. But it's really been around the margins or around the edges to some degree. And that's a heck of a big edge when you talk that way. But if you think about it, what I mean is this. It might be one department that didn't do a hire. It might be we didn't buy a piece of equipment over here. It means in some other part of the campus, we pulled back travel funds. That's really happened across all the campus at this point on any kind of state money. In another place, we maybe didn't do something to support a conference or some type of regional event that was going on.
Or you didn't hire a speaker for $30,000.
All kinds of things like that, right? So across the entire board, that came up to $21 million. That's the tightening of the belt. But now to get the next 30, identify that, it is going to be some dismantling of things. It'll be program closures. It will be taking a block of operations at the campus and saying we just can't do this anymore. It will be merging programs and administrative units. It's no longer, and I just always feel weird when I use the term, but it's no longer operating on the margins now to get the savings. We've done that. And it's going to be going in and saying, okay, this chunk of work we're lifting out and not doing anymore. That's tough for any university to do because there's always something you can take on. There's always work to be done. There's always some program that needs support. But we're at the point we've got to pull back. We stop it. And we make sure we have a financial sustainability plan for that campus that keeps the doors open and has us moving forward into the future.
$817 million in what Illinois State Representative Brandon Phelps defined as a lifeline. $817 million in two categories, social services and higher education.
Yes.
This money is setting in the fund. It's called
there.
The Education Assistance Fund and the Social Services Account. It's called Commitment to Human Services
yes.
Fund. It's there. It's already been paid into the system.
Yes.
It's ready to go out the door. But we don't have the...
This, and Representative Phelps is absolutely right, and this tells you that this is going now way beyond kind of operational issues or trying to figure out a way to keep everybody in the fold and take care of all of these state entities, because, as you say, the money is there.
That's got to be galling for you, Marty. It's
very difficult to deal with. Measure did pass the House of Representatives on a party line vote. It will go to the Senate, we understand, we expect, we believe, when they go back into session next week. But there was a reason that bill was called a lifeline. And it is because you've got social service agencies, you've got the public universities that are now beyond running on fumes, and it would have given us that amount just to carry us through to the end of the fiscal year, at least, to see where this goes. Now, I get the argument. So those who are not in favor of releasing this money that is sitting in the state's accounts right now, those not in favor of releasing that money are saying, you know, if that happens... If that moves forward, it will take the pressure off all of the elected officials to get a full and complete year budget done. And you know, weirdly, I do kind of understand the argument. So,
well, you weren't born yesterday.
No, no, no.
We know how this all works.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if there's a little more cash that trickles out, then we keep kicking the can. So I actually do get that argument that's been made.
To ultimately precipitate a decision, an outcome, a definitive nature, instead of dog paddling from
thing.
One disaster
that's
to the next.
To get a full budget would be the optimal, the best thing. So we'll see where that goes when the chambers come back into session next week. But if we're sitting here through the rest of April into May, the end of session, and we don't have a budget plan, then it's time to come back and look at that House action
and say
we better do something.
Yeah.
We better do something to save these agencies until we figure it out. And, you know, I'll tell you something else, Tom. You're getting me wound up today.
Thank you.
Uh-oh. Well, you
not done yet.
You can do that. So we hear this discussion. No more stopgaps. We're going to stop that business. That's bad practice. And I get that, too. I believe that. I'll tell you one thing, and I just heard your story about Ziegler-Royalton School District that was played before I came on.
Right.
Let me tell you one thing. If we're sitting here in summer and there is not money, state aid, that's getting pushed out to K-12 school districts, don't think we won't have a stopgap. It's not going to be the case that these elected officials come into the start of school in August, and we have a lot of schools down in our region that will not be able to operate. They're not sitting on 180 days or 300 days of cash
margins,
a lot of schools up north.
Those margins you talked about for them?
Yes.
They're a lot thinner.
And as I pointed out to somebody today in my previous life, when I used to be state superintendent of schools, I used to read the annual financial reports of all those school districts, mm-hmm. and I saw how many days cash they had that they were sitting on, and we don't have that luxury for
daredevils.
Our school system.
They're financial daredevils.
That's exactly right, and pretty creative. So something's going to happen eventually, whether it's a budget, a big stopgap,
and we're
going to be on that train. That's right.
Yeah, or everybody just leaves the
That's
state
right.
and go, hey, how you doing?
That's
Moody's
right.
Investment Services
yes.
saying we're going to evaluate
yes.
every public university. Northeastern dropped two levels.
Yes.
And look, with under the current circumstances and what we've been told, I can't envision a Moody's decision that would involve anything going up.
No. No, no. In fact, and what people don't know that they're going to know pretty soon, Standard & Poor's has also been doing this, and Moody's maybe a little more aggressive in pushing their news releases out. But we've been in the midst of discussion with Standard & Poor's, and we're expecting any day that they're going to do the same thing, because we've had conference calls with them, been sending them data, and that within a day or two we're going to see something, and then Moody's says within 90 days they're going to follow on, and we kind of know what the outcome's going to be.
Perception is reality is something that I've always fought as a slogan, because I know it's not true, but then again, I know that it is.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
It's one of those, you know, yeah, we got to hold two opposing ideas in your head without
yes.
going nuts.
Yes.
So Northeastern University goes out and says, we're going to get Valerie Jarrett, we're going to give her $30,000, and they did this about 2 weeks after they announced they're going to close down for 3 days to save money. Higher education has this occasional tendency to shoot itself in the foot, which allows other people saying, oh, you can do without it. It fuels that. Northeastern did that for us. Harris, so 2 weeks ago and a week ago with Valerie Jarrett. And now a state legislator says, look, no more public funds on these commencement speakers. I mean, it's pending legislation.
Yeah, I know. Well, at SIU, since I've been here, I know the very first commencement I did after I'd been at work for about 10 days here back 3 years ago was the last paid commencement speaker we had for both Carbondale and Edwardsville. And then we moved. That just is a tough practice, in my view. So we moved away from that, did honorary doctorates and distinguished alumni, things like that. You let them say a few
words. Because you got them.
And nobody, here's my view, Tom. Nobody cares what a commencement speaker says because you don't remember 2 years down the line. You want to get your diploma, degree, you want to go have your party, you want to see your family. This is what commencement is about. It's a celebration. But I'm not all...
You need a commencement speaker, call
well,
me. I got something
oh,
to
that,
say.
That would be a doozy.
Guarantee. I spent 42 years training SIU students. So,
I don't know that it's just higher education that can shoot itself in the foot. Sometimes it's all these state agencies. I'm going to tell an example on us.
Opportunity
okay?
tax.
But at the last meeting of our SIU Board of Trustees now a couple of weeks ago that was held in Carbondale, we had a very controversial item on the agenda that we held. We're going to come back and deal with it later on in a few weeks. But that controversial item was the use of unrestricted reserves from the Edwardsville campus to help support the Carbondale campus. First time that's happened.
You told me you were going to do that when you were here last time.
In that direction. And we put the board decided to hold the matter, actually a procedural determination to hold the matter. We're going to come back in a special meeting probably in 2 to 3 weeks and take that up and likely end up having to do it since we have no stopgap, since there is no lifeline at this point. Well, at the meeting where that was discussed, we also had on the board agenda that day a purchasing contract of about $2 million of athletic equipment for Saluki Athletics. And one of our trustees said just the same thing you did. And the motion was made, seconded, it passed, because you have to buy equipment. If you're going to have a Division I athletic program, you have to buy uniforms and shoes and all of these things. But one of our trustees said after, like, good grief, couldn't we have thought, and it was all well-meaning, she wasn't upset. Good grief, couldn't we thought that through a little bit better before we put, that kind of item up, when we're sitting here talking about trying to figure out operating cash for the Carbondale campus? And I go, I just kind of shook my head. I go, I know, bad optics. But then as another trustee said, but if you're going to have a university, you do have to run the university. We have to make purchases every month and payroll and all of that. And I do get your point. I'm not going to sit here in judgment on Northeastern. But, the optics can get real goofy after a while.
Search for chancellor. You're going to have to find somebody who is...
Superman. We can say Superman at this point because the four finalist candidates are men.
Good with a calculator, good with a knife.
And good to explain things.
Yeah. A people person who knows the dire situation, who understands the optics and understands how to lead in most dire situations.
Yes. And to that point, we've also got to have someone who's willing to commit to that university, to the region, and stay here a good long while. One of the big, I've said this many times publicly now, one of the, whether to say it's the top criterion or not, I don't know if that's appropriate, but
willing
I'll
to
tell
stick
you,
it out.
You got it. We've got to have someone who provides continuity, is not going to be looking at how does the job at SIU Carbondale lead me to the next job. We've got to stop the revolving door that we've had in chancellors for the campus, and you 10 over the past 20 years, if you count interims and that type of thing, and the relationship with the system office and the president to the campus and the chancellor, it has to be solid. It has to be strong.
Yeah.
Not one where, you're kind of batting against one another or in some sort of dispute. We've got to work hand in glove, and it's got to be someone who's willing to commit for the long haul to get until we get through everything and stabilized. And it's going to take time. It's going to take a while.
Benton Mayor Tom Condridge was on the air with me, I believe it was Monday or Tuesday this week. And he said, we've come to the conclusion we cannot look to Springfield. We have to look to ourselves. That's not an option that's available for you.
Well,
it's not like you can go out and raise property taxes.
No, that we do not have the variables to work with or maneuver that even the community colleges do. We don't have a property tax. We are not, as kind of a quasi-unit of state government, we're not allowed to do short-term borrowing. This is why we had to pull down unrestricted reserves. And now for Carbondale, we're looking to in essence, loan some of the Edwardsville reserves. We can't go out for a working cash issuance or some time of short-term borrowing. So we're pretty locked down. To wit, I say, if we're going to be viewed as a unit of state government, then get us in under the tent along with the rest of state government and get some money flowing again. We've done our part. We've done the cuts. We've reined it in. We're looking at another $30 million. We've been responsive to this, and we haven't been crying in our beer in the process unduly, I would say. We've said, okay, here's our situation. Here's what we've got to do. But at some point, the state of Illinois is going to have to decide, do they want to support a state system of public universities? And if so, as a state university, there has to be some level of support or we start peeling it back to the bones.
Okay, this brings us up. Would you mind putting on
headphones? I'll put on my headphones.
Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza was in the studio this morning. I framed, of course, the question that we're all together familiar with about the economic impact of the presence of SIU in Southern Illinois. And this is where we pick up the conversation with Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza, recorded just 7 o'clock this morning. Later this morning, SIU President Randy Dunn is going to be joining me in the studio. If he was here now, what would you tell him?
I'd tell him we have to, you know, everybody has to be putting pressure on the governor to put aside his pet projects, things like term limits and redistricting, and go ahead and call those on the House floor and the Senate floor and debate them like normal human beings do in a democracy, right? But they should not be holding the budget hostage as a result of holding on to his pet projects.
Really, the way I interpret this is the same thing you just said. We've got to make a decision what we're going to do. Yes. And how we're going to support state universities. That's how I interpret
Yes.
that statement.
Yes. Yeah. And
especially in light of your comments.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, she's an elected official, a constitutional officer. Know her. She's been very good in her role. To be responsive to the state universities when there is some cash available, whether it's on a grant or something, to get that pushed out to us. So she's been helpful in that regard. So I'm not going to say, you know, we're going to go after a governor or we're not, you know, go after a speaker or certain elected officials. That's not what we're about at SIU or the universities. But to the point, at some juncture, let's get some things teed up and voting on them. And we had House Bill 109, the lifeline. At least there was a proposal there. It got voted on, and it's going to go to the Senate. Let's see if
governor.
A budget can get out there.
I asked the governor if he'd sign it. He told me he didn't.
No, the governor's no. But he's been up front. He said, "I'm not going to sign a. I'm not going to do any more lifelines."
I want a budget.
He says, "I want you guys to know where I am, and I'm not going to do a lifeline or a stopgap. I want a budget." So, you know, he's making clear where he is, and the party's just got to keep at it and get it figured out.
The one unquantifiable and somewhat esoteric nature of what we are talking about, we talk about it in a very math-like, and we have for the last 16 minutes talked about it as a math problem.
Yes.
But the human beings, first off, they like repetition. They like a schedule.
Routine,
they
order.
Like know what they do.
Yes.
The human brain, humans do not go somewhere until their brains have already gone there and played out a scenario. If I go over here and I decide I'm going to go to a car lot and buy a car, I first envision myself going to the car lot, the way it smells, talking to the sales officer, what I'm going to say, whether I'm going to walk off. I mean, we pretend in our own minds,
yes,
whether you realize it. And when we do not have the ability to at least kind of have divine the future, when it is a blank sheet, human beings do not do well. Fear of the unknown.
Yes.
Change is bad enough. Change is something you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's terrifying,
yeah,
for the humans. So what you have here is a faculty, staff, students, and parents making a decision who are making it based on the presence of fear in their decision-making.
Yes.
That fabric and how you have to fight forward financially while at the same time providing a marketing solution to reach out to them, to assure them they can come here and get what they paid for,
right,
is really the unquantifiable problem that is really the essence of the future in which you are expected to make decisions.
That was actually quite eloquent, Tom.
Thank you.
Yes. I
can do commencement speeches, too.
And teach a psychology class, I'm guessing, too.
If I could, you'd let me. I guarantee you they won't go nuts in 401. Maybe.
No, I'm with you 100%. So we've got this juxtaposition, or keeping these, as you say, competing ideas in our head, while we've got to be responsive to the reality that's in front of us, and this fear of the unknown, the lack of what's seeing what's ahead, the unpredictability, the uncertainty. It takes a toll organizationally. Morale has been just punched in the gut, given all of this, and the ones who, for whatever reason in their own lives, have the means to go elsewhere or look at doing something else, many of them are envisioning that different future. And it's going to take years to build that loss of human capital back that we're in the midst of right now. But at the same time, we've got to communicate to potential Salukis and Cougars up at SIUE and their families and those who look at us reputationally to show that we are going to be here for the long haul. We're going to end up looking differently, obviously. We've got to make changes to the landscape of SIU, but we're not in a position where we're going to have to shut the doors, or we're going to be missing payrolls, or we're going to quit doing what we do as a university. The idea of all of this is to make sure we've got the path for that sustainability, as opposed to the situation other universities and community colleges right now are finding themselves in. That is the charge to keep the patient alive, and we're going to do that. And right now, it's on, you know, the patient's on life support, but not going to die. The doors will be open. The program, if we admit a kid to a program, we're going to teach that kid out. We have to. We're going to lose our accreditation if we won't. Departments may change. The way we organize ourselves may change. What we do for the region may be different. The number of people we have, how we get non-academic services done, all of this is up for discussion. But will there be an SIU doing essentially the core mission of what it stands to do? Yes. Yes, it will.
SIU President Randy Dunn.
Thank you, sir.
Always good to see you, man.
Thank you.
And sincerely, best of luck. I mean this. Whoop. You know, I mean, SIU is a point of honor for Southern Illinoisans.
Hugely. We've got House of Representatives having an Economic Development Committee meeting actually today over in Dunn, Richmond, 1 o'clock, and the purpose of that subject matter hearing is really to gather information on the toll, the difficulty of the universities, the public universities, has taken on the community. So we've got some folks testifying. Mayor Henry will be over from Carbondale. George Sheffer is a business owner. I'm going to be testifying, and others, because the House is trying to get a handle on what's happening to these college towns that are just now very challenged.
I got to tell you, George Sheffer called me from the Capitol building last week, mm-hmm. and said, can you get me so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so? I don't want to talk to them. We're in the Capitol. They were up there fighting for SIU.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of champions, and thank goodness we do, who are helping carry the flag for SIU and Carbondale and Marion and Southern Illinois as a whole, because we got university presidents and others are looked at with having vested interest. And we do. We need folks like this to also carry that flag, given the importance of the university to the region. And, you know, we're terribly appreciative for all those folks who do that, like George and really
Along
hundreds of others.
Yep. Yeah, literally. And including you recruiting the alumni.
Including you. Thank you.